Water, earth, fire, air. Months ago, all of us could come and go as we pleased in harmony. Then everything changed when the pandemic attacked. Only the TV series Avatar, The Last Airbender, a series our friends kept telling us about, would stop us from anxiously watching the news. But just when we needed to stream it most, it vanished.
About a month had passed, and my cousin and I discovered that Avatar, a show about an airbender named Aang, would start streaming on Netflix in a few weeks. And although our podcasting skills are great, we had a lot of episodes to watch before we were ready to podcast for anyone. But we believe Aang saved us from the chaos of our world. This is Kin Folklore, Avatar, The Last Airbender.
Hi everyone! Today we're continuing our journey through Avatar, The Last Airbender. I'm Andrea, and Paul and I are cousins who love fantasy and sci-fi and talk about it pretty much endlessly.
Yep, and we decided that we wanted to start this podcast to share our excitement about exploring fantasy worlds and our observations with you. And it's been a lot of fun so far. In our first season, we covered His Dark Materials, and our second season, we covered The Witcher. You should go and check both of those out if you're into those shows. And through the podcast, we've been able to interact with tons of fans of those worlds and gain a deeper appreciation of both of those stories. And we're excited that we're doing the same thing now with Avatar The Last Airbender.
Because the episodes of Atla are much shorter than what we previously covered, we changed our format a bit. Each week, we cover a block of episodes. We'll provide a summary and talk about the themes introduced and what we learn. Last week, we discussed episodes 13 through 16, and we'll be talking about episodes 17 through 20, so the season finale. This week, if you haven't already finished this season, you should do that before listening to this podcast.
And this podcast will have adult content, so if you're okay with late night creeps under moonlight so you can do an activity together, you've come to the right place.
Smooth, Prince Sokka.
This guy was not smooth. Oh my gosh.
So the first episode we're talking about this week is episode 17, The Northern Air Temple. Team Avatar is hanging out, chilling in a camp, listening to stories by the fire. And they're hearing about airbending.
I have real issues with this, by the way. There's no marshmallows in this whole scenario. Where are the roasted marshmallows?
I mean, listen, these folks are not... They don't have a lot of money, so marshmallows is not
high on
the
priorities. They were just eating rocks a few episodes ago. You're right. Forget it.
The storyteller tells them that his great-grandfather saw the airbenders last week.
What?
Yeah. So they take off, and they arrive at the Northern Air Temple and see people flying in the distance.
Okay.
Aang knows that they're not airbenders because they have no... quotation spirit.
Is that like, you know, code for like rhythm? Is that what we're doing?
That's how I took it.
These guys are not rhythmic at all. Okay. Got it. Good call, Aang.
So the team encounters a young man named Teo. Teo takes them into the temple where his father has refitted it with pipes, in effect, damaging everything, including a mural that tells a story of the history of airbenders. Aang is not okay with this.
He should not be.
Like, he says it's interesting, and he says it the same way that I say things in work meetings when I'm like, oh, that's interesting. And I mean, it's garbage.
Yeah, exactly. Trash.
Yes.
Trash situation.
So he's pretty upset. And then Teo takes him to another site where it hasn't been remodeled, and Aang's excited about that. Just then, we meet Teo's father, the mechanist, who is an innovator, an inventor, who smashes a statue.
Oh, God.
So that he can create a bathhouse.
Because the people stink, you know?
Let's let that settle in. He smashes a sacred statue so that he can create a bathhouse. So Aang is as angry as we've ever seen him.
Yeah.
And
heated.
He decides he's not having that. He effectively airbends the crane that they were using over the side of the mountain.
Very accurately, I might add.
Yeah.
He like skipped. They were standing in front of that thing and he like just hit that thing and didn't send them, which they should be lucky because it looked like he was ready to airbend them off the fucking cliff. He was like, forget this.
Yeah, he has a complete meltdown. Yeah. It's pretty great. Yeah. I can totally understand. So Teo's father tells Aang that what inspired him to build in this place was that he was inspired by the airbenders. Mm. He started building on the temple when his family became refugees after a flood. That is the flood that injured Teo, who was an infant at the time. And, you know, he says it's kind of an ode to the airbenders.
Yeah. He wanted to give
Aang's not about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, he wanted to give something special to his son too, who lost his ability to walk in that incident, right? So that being able to fly and soar was what he could try to help him through his, you know, finding the gliders could help him to learn how to do that. That was really cool. And Teo's awesome. I think he's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. Aang does not think this is awesome. He's still pretty pissed. So in an effort to make the peace, Teo decides to take them to a part of the temple that hasn't changed, which is the sanctuary. Just like the Southern Air Temple, this sanctuary can only be opened by an airbender. And Aang says he's not going to do it because he wants the temple to stay as it is, and so he doesn't want to open it.
Way to put your foot down.
Meanwhile, Sokka and Teo's father go underground to a room that is holding natural gas, so it's a death trap. I feel like Teo's father is extremely casual about this. And he says that he's trying to find a way to make sure that there isn't a leak. From time to time, there's a leak. Obviously, a leak means an explosion. That's not a good look.
First way, fireflies instead of an actual lantern. Because he burnt off his eyebrows. Motherfucker burnt his, singed his brow. Like, it's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, it's and he's very casual about it. I was like, this everyone should be evacuating. But okay. Whatever. Meanwhile, Teo, Aang, and Katara decide to go gliding. And Aang decides, after all, that Teo has some spirit and he's gonna let him see inside this
and leaves Katara hanging out there gliding all on her own to tell him this,
eating bugs.
Oh, that's a bug.
Momo was killing it. Momo was all about the bugs. He's like, this is how I get fed.
Yeah, exactly. It was great.
Meanwhile, Sokka and Teo's pops are working on a solution, trying to figure out how they're gonna determine if there's a natural gas leak, and Sokka accidentally knocks over a bunch of stuff, and in that stuff is a rotten egg from last week's lunch. Why was this egg still there?
Not a good move. I don't even understand how he tolerated that for that long. Last week's lunch? Like, that means that thing's been stinking for a minute.
It's disgusting.
Yeah.
I was horrified. So while they're looking for the egg, they realize that rotten eggs have a very powerful smell, and it's a one-of-a-kind type of smell. And they decide that they're going to put a bunch of rotten eggs into the room where the natural gas is, and that way they can use their noses to figure out where the leak is coming from. Because anywhere that smells like rotten eggs, that's where the leak
will. I feel like Sokka had a really good science teacher in the Water Tribe.
Yeah. Totally. I mean, Sokka is a science man.
Yeah, he is.
He is all about the science, and he's very rational. So Aang opens up the sanctuary and finds a living nightmare. Like, it's just full of Fire Nation weapons. It's pretty scary. And the musical cues are really dramatic. It was great.
And the bell goes off. The guy knows. He's like, the bell. He's, oh, no. Something's happened. Gotta go.
Teo's dad shows up. Everybody's outraged. It's pretty upsetting. And he says that he had to do this because about a year after they arrived at the temple, the Fire Nation showed up and said that the only way that they could stay in the temple was if they created weapons for the Fire Nation. So just then, a Fire Nation general arrives, and he and Aang exchange some words, and Aang air slaps him. Aang was just, you know, for lack of a better word, on fire this whole episode. Really, just, Aang was not having it.
It was like the Chappelle Show when you know, Rick James slaps Charlie Murphy. That was pretty hilarious. He slapped him right in the face. Oh, it was great.
So now the Fire Nation is pissed, and they're going to attack any minute. So Aang and the gang decide to mount an air-based defense, you know, using the fact that they're on a mountain and it's, you know, they have all of these gliders is an advantage.
Right.
Sokka works on the war balloon, which I was like, what? What is this?
Oh, man.
And when the Fire Nation attacks, things are going pretty well until they realize that the Fire Nation has tanks that can climb up mountains.
And flip upside down and still drive.
And then just keep going. Tao realizes that the tanks are using water to balance, and Katara decides, okay, I can help here. So she uses her water bending skills to stop them. Just when she's getting overwhelmed, Sokka and Tao's father drop slime on the Fire Nation, and then they find the natural gas leak and blow it up, and the Fire Nation has to retreat. Mm. Aang, in the end, decides that he's pretty glad that Tao's family has made the temple their home. You know, you can honor the past and still want to build on it, and at least it's not empty. And he makes his peace with them. And then the Fire Nation finds the war balloon and very, like, villainously says that they can't wait to use it themselves.
This will lead to a doorway to many victories.
Weirdo. What a weirdo.
All of the Fire Nation is just really dramatic.
Like, they're dramatic, and so is the water tribes. They're like super dramatic on opposite spectrums. But I
there's a lot. I mean, I guess the Earth Kingdom is also dramatic. Like, everyone in this place needs to bring it down a notch.
Just a notch. And Aang does a quick, like, mind trick on them. He's like, I kind of like that you guys got this, and it feels really good. In actuality, what he's saying, this place is a shithole, okay? Like, there's no salvaging it. There's, like, a gas leak. You guys have a shitty deli with rotten eggs. I'm done. I'm out of here. I'm going back on Appa. We're going to go someplace better. So, off to the North Pole for Aang. Great job. Episode 18 is The Water Bending Master. And Team Avatar finds the Northern Water Tribe. They finally arrive. They don't think they're going to, and then all of a sudden a bunch of waterbenders come out, and they find it just as our favorite bender Zhao is planning his next move with other commanders. The Northern Tribe is no small village. They're not like the Southern Water Tribe. They are, and he knows that they need a massive invasion force if they're going to go and try to attack the Northern Water Tribe. Zhao is not wrong. The Northern Tribe lives in a kingdom, very differently from where Sokka and Katara grew up. And a young woman passes in a gondola as Sokka and Katara are entering the kingdom, and Sokka immediately has a crush. You know?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he's...
Yeah, he's making eyes right away.
Oh, yeah.
He's like, hey.
Yeah, I mean... And she stands out. She's got, like, you know, the white hair. It's pulled back. She's chilling. Got a nice little outfit on. I feel him. It's good. She's cute. I got it.
Yeah, she's cute.
Yeah, go Sokka. All right, so on Zuko's ship, Iroh is, you know, doing Iroh things, right? He's enjoying a little music, singing that smash hit bangers. This guy only has the bangers. And here it is, Four Seasons.
Winter, spring, summer, and fall. Winter, spring, summer, and fall.
He's getting it too.
Four seasons for love.
He's going, man. I'm jamming. I'm starting to jam.
Yeah, no, it's a legit good song.
Man, I'm humming the song every day around the house. It's crazy. This guy with the bangers.
Finally, we get to go to music night.
Yeah.
All this time we're hearing about music night, and finally we get to go, and it pays off. It's great.
It pays off, man. And here comes Zhao, abruptly interrupting with his sour ass, like, you know? And that's where we leave that scene, and we go back to the Northern Water Tribe. where they're welcoming Team Avatar with a banquet. This is also celebrating the birthday of the chief's daughter, Princess Yue. Uh-oh, who is that? The same girl that was floating by in the gondola. Sokka tries to get to know Yue, but he's having a little bit of a rough time, you know?
I'm basically a prince where I come from.
No, you're not.
Bruh, there's no other young boys. I mean, it's not exactly a lie, but it's not a great flex.
No, not at all. So the chief introduces Aang to Master Paku, who is not messing around. Aang is like, oh, my friends and me, we're going to sightsee. And Tia, he's like, yo, let's go and get to work. If you want to train, be there tomorrow. And he's kind of like the professor that locks the door once class starts, you know?
Nobody's getting in late.
Nobody.
Nobody's coming in late.
Nobody.
That lecture starts at 10 a.m. on the dot. No one's coming in late.
I always feel so bad for the people on the other side of the glass. Like, yo, teacher. Nah, you're not getting in, bro. You should have been here 5 minutes early. Back with Team Zuko, Iroh comes in to Zuko's cabin to drop the news that Zhao is commandeering his entire crew. And Zuko's sour ass greets him with the, for the last time, uncle, I'm not playing the Sungi horn. What a freak. I mean, he's just too much.
He's so brooding. Yeah, so
he's brooding. He's definitely brooding. And so, you know, no, you're not going to be playing the Sungi horn. And guess what you're also not going to have? Your crew.
even the cook.
Even the cook. He took the cook. Iroh was in pain. He said, he even took the cook. Oh, man. And so Zhao realizes that Zuko is the blue spirit because he sees the broadswords. But decides that, you know, he'll just drop a veiled threat and walk up out. Aang and Katara shows up for their lesson with Paku. And Paku says he's not going to train Katara because she's a woman. And that women don't fight in the water tribe and that she should go off to the healing class. And Aang struggles with this at first. And he's like, yo, I'm not taking lessons from you, dude. Like, if you're not going to train Katara, you're not going to train me. I feel you, Aang. I feel you. But Katara...
Katara's also really pissed.
Yeah, she's super pissed. As she should be. Like, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, this is a ridiculous role.
Yeah, so Katara is definitely about to lose her temper. And she realizes, though, that Aang really needs to learn waterbending if he's going to save the world, right? So she's like, no, don't give up on this, Aang. And she leaves and she goes to the healing class. But she really wants to fight. Sokka and Yue... schedule a date for later, or as she says, oh, you want me to do an activity?
Activity?
As my guy takes, you know, a little bath in the Northern Water Kingdom. Like, he walks off the frozen sidewalk into the water. It's pretty hilarious. So, but he does get the date. Well done, Sokka. Zhao meets with the band of pirates from earlier in the season, and he sends them on a mission. And next scene, Katara goes to her healing lesson, and the teacher tells her that the necklace that she's wearing is a betrothal necklace. She hits her with the like, oh, when are you getting married? She's like, Katara's like, oh, I'm not getting married. What are you talking about? This is craziness. I'm not ready for all that. And she goes, oh, it's like a betrothal necklace you have on. And she recognizes that it was her grand-grand's necklace. And then, you know, the lady says, that I can't believe I didn't recognize because you look like the spitting image of her. And that Grand-Grand was born in the Northern Water Tribe, which is a revelation for Katara. And she was engaged to a waterbender who made that necklace for her, but she left without saying goodbye to her friend, who's the teacher in the healing class. Back with, Team Zuko, we're seeing that Iroh decides that he wants to take a walk. And then when he's walking, the pirates strike and they blow up the ship with Zuko on board. The ship explodes and Iroh is left watching it burn, thinking that his nephew's dead. It's, and he's upset about it, obviously. Iroh loves Zuko. So then Sokka and Yue's date, it doesn't go quite as planned. He shows up. He's happy. He brought her something that he made. Sokka's a terrible artist, so whatever he made wasn't very good. Definitely should stick to the STEM, not a STEAM guy. He's a STEM guy. in their room, after the date goes terrible and UA's like, I gotta bounce, I'm done, I can't be here, he's sulking. And Sokka suggests that Aang teaches Katara, since Paku won't teach Katara some of the moves at night. So he says that's a great idea, and they go to do it, and Master Paku catches them, and they have to go before the chief, and the chief asks Katara to apologize, and she's thinking about it, and then he insults her, and she's like, no. And actually, she's more like, hell no, I'm not apologizing to this old asshole. And Katara, basically, in the heat of the moment, outburst is like, if you're man enough, meet me outside. How about that?
She said you could catch these hands right now. Right now.
She is the catch me outside. How about that, girl? Like, that's what happened. That's exactly what happened. It's crazy. So Iroh goes to see Zhao in the next scene and basically decides he's going to join him. And he doesn't know, and little does Zhao know, that Zuko is actually on the ship posing as one of his Fire Nation soldiers. Paku refuses to fight Katara, but she's not having it back in the Northern Water Tribe. And she says, okay, and she slaps him in the back of the head with a nice little water whip. I was like, yo, okay, Katara. And she battles with them, and she battles well. Like, she has, with the little skill that she's mustered with her waterbending scroll and her time practicing, and she gets him one, and she's like, I will not be knocked down. And the crowd is cheering. And despite being bested several times, she refuses to go down, which is awesome. And just as Paku is about to walk away after kind of, winning the battle, he finds the necklace. And which fell off during the fight that they were having. And it was Paku who made the necklace for Grand Grand 60 Aww. Years ago. Man, crazy. And she's like kind of upset about that. Don't you think Katara was like, you're the one who gave this to Grand Grand? She's a little bit irritated that he...
Yeah, she's a little... I don't think that was the person that she had in mind. No. She's a little salty about it.
But she realizes in that moment that some of why her grand-grand left the Northern Water Tribe was because of their customs and how they treat the women in their tribe. And she, left because her marriage was arranged and she didn't want to conform to the gender norms that governed the lives of the people in the Northern Water Tribe. Yue hears this and she runs away crying.
Dramatically, extremely. I have words for Yue. Continue. Yeah.
So she confesses to Sokka when Sokka follows her that she's already engaged, which is why she kind of bounced on him on the date, and that she too has been set up for an arranged marriage. We go back to Paku, who continues to train Aang, and Katara now joins.
And she's late, which is a no-no.
It's definitely a no-no. And she's flexing. She flexed. It's a flex. Like, it's like a little humble, like, yeah, you're going to still teach me. It's cool. I like it. And the episode closes on Zhao's fleet heading towards the Northern Water Tribe.
All right. That was, oof. Yue, I have things to say about her. We'll get there. Yeah. So episode 19 is called The Siege of the North, Part 1. So Katara is killing it in her waterbending lessons. Just like flexing, making fools of all these people who have been training all this time with Paku. Paku uses this as an opportunity to throw a little shade at Aang.
Rightfully so.
Who, as usual, is not taking anything seriously. No. And by reminding everyone that, mastering bending takes determination and hard work. It's not just about raw talent. And then he looks very pointedly at Aang.
And this guy makes a snowman. He makes a snowman. Like, oh, I wouldn't say mastered. I'm like, he makes a snowman. Oh, God. Aang, come on, man. You gotta.
Yeah, this was not great. He's not a great student.
No. You gotta fight the Fire Lord soon. Come on, get it together.
So Sokka doesn't seem to care much that Yue is engaged, and he decides to take her on what we like to call like a non-date. We're just hanging. We're just hanging out.
We're friends. Like, we're not. Cool.
We're friends. Right, aren't you allowed to have friends? Yeah. Your man doesn't want you to have friends.
That's a classic.
Oh man! So he decides he's gonna flex by taking her on a ride on Appa.
Oh man! And he hits her with the slow, dramatic, yip, yip.
So as they're flying and exploring, ashes begin to fall from the sky. It's the Fire Nation. The Fire Nation is near. Zhao, meanwhile, in the front of the fleet, is talking a whole lot of shit to Iroh about being the admiral who destroyed the last of the waterbenders. Talking a lot of shit. And Iroh's like, okay, homie, we'll see.
I won't have your kind of failure at Ba Sing Se. This guy's all extra, man.
I can't stand him.
He fucked up music night. Never forgive him.
It's true. That was pretty awful. As they're running into the castle to retreat, Yue decides again that now is a good time to break things off with Sokka.
They're firing at them. They're like, shit is dropping. Things are exploding. She's like, you know what? I can't do this. I have to run off mid-battle. What?
Sokka deserves better. I'm just saying. Like, this treatment, I'm not saying he deserves better than Yue. I like Yue. But this treatment is terrible.
Yeah.
She just keeps going back and forth. I need you to decide, Yue. I need you to decide. Don't put my boy Sokka through this.
At all. No, Sokka's a good dude. He's a good dude. Yeah. Stand up.
So the chief, who is clearly the person that Yue got her overdramatics from, gives a somber speech and calls upon the spirits of the ocean and the moon to stand with them. He asks for volunteers for a dangerous mission, and Sokka volunteers.
It is very hard to look out upon the faces that we will never see again, because many of you are going to die. This is not the guy.
Yeah. At that point, I would have tried to slip quietly from the room.
Talk about trying to rally troops to your cause. This is not the guy you want giving the rousing speech in your army at all.
This was no Captain America speech.
No, at all.
Yeah, Cap would not give this speech.
No, yeah. Tony wouldn't give this speech.
I was about to say Tony would, but then I was like, no, even Tony wouldn't give this speech.
No.
Oh, okay. So the battle begins with the Fire Nation attacking with literal balls of fire. I mean, come on, a little originality.
But here's the thing. It hits the fucking wall and everybody's surprised and blown away. This is so freaking similar to things we've seen in other battles. Like, you guys didn't prepare at all. This reminded me of Game of Thrones and the fucking scene where the Night King blows up the wall and everybody was surprised. It's like, okay, they were catching a little by surprise, but you had to know that the Fire Nation was going to throw fireballs at the ice. Like, this is an important thing.
Yeah, it also reminded me of in The Witcher when the fireballs came and they were really shocked. But that was they didn't know that they had that power. Understandable that they were a little shocked.
Yeah, thank God for Yen. She woke up in the middle of that shit. Like, that was not for her. They'd all would have burnt up in their sleep.
Yeah. So Aang manages to disable the first battleship. And he basically uses the same strategy he used when he fought Zhao the last time, which is using their own weapons against them. Mm-hmm. They basically blow up their own ship. Mm-hmm. And the mission that the chief has sent Sokka and some of the other volunteers on is to infiltrate the Fire Nation Navy. Sokka has some feedback about, the fact that their uniforms that they're trying to use are 100 years old. Did he say they were 70 years old?
Yeah, he goes,
100.
From like 100 years ago? 70. They got the shoulder cones with the spikes. He's like, they don't wear. And they're like, we need to infiltrate and find out who is their leader. He's like, it's Zhao. Like,
Zhao. Zhao's name. He's a middle-aged guy. His social security is he's coming with the good information. He meets his rival for Yue's heart, Han. This guy.
Ugh.
Just, ugh. I can't. Okay,
if
I said
that. Trash was a soldier. If Trash was a soldier, he would be him.
So since Sokka knows a lot about the Fire Nation, he and Han must work together. Meanwhile, Iroh tells Zhao that the waterbenders draw their power from the moon and that he should stop the attack until daybreak. Which Zhao does that. Mm-hmm. He thinks that's sound advice. Iroh goes to speak with his nephew, who is preparing to leave to find the Avatar.
The Avatar.
For my honor.
Honor.
He tells Zuko that ever since he lost his son, he thinks of Zuko as his own. And I'm not going to lie, I got a little...
I did too.
A little misty-eyed.
I got a little teary. It was, and he says, "You don't have to say it, uncle." And then they hug. And then,
yeah, it was really beautiful.
Iroh was the best, though. He was like, "Did you button up? Make sure you wear your hood. Use your fire breathing if you get into a cold spot." Like, it was the cutest. He was, like, preparing him for, like, a journey. Like, "Did you pack your lunch?" It was awesome. Iroh's the best. I love Iroh. He makes me happy.
Yeah, he's a great character. So, after Han and Sokka get into a physical altercation about Yue, because, you know, Han was saying some stuff that Sokka didn't like, basically that he was going to use Yue for his own advantage.
No, he basically described being a social climber.
Yeah,
and having
exactly.
No feelings for this woman at all. And just like, he basically was like, "She's cool, but like, I've had better." But you know, the perks. He said the perks. Like it was a fucking like corporate suite. Or like her heart was like, I don't know, a private jet. It was ridiculous. It was terrible. I'm glad Sokka beat him up.
Yeah. So the chief takes Sokka off of the mission because basically these two can't get along.
Yeah.
Yue tells Aang and Katara that their strength comes from the spirit of the moon and life comes from the spirit of the ocean, which work together to keep the balance. And they're all kind of contemplating, like, what are they going to do when daybreak comes and the Fire Nation attacks again? Aang realizes that is a bridge between humanity and the spirits. He can speak to the spirits of the moon and the ocean and get some help. Yue then takes him to the most spiritual place in the Northern Tribe, which is a small garden just surrounded by icebergs, but it's warm. Mm-hmm. Like, it's a little garden. It has a pond. Mm-hmm. It has grass, which Aang is really excited about. Yeah. And just then, Zuko has landed on the shore and decides to follow some seals into the kingdom. Now, can I just say,
yeah,
we know that Zuko is a skilled bender.
Mm-hmm.
We know that Zuko, when he has something in mind, really, really wants to accomplish it.
Determined.
Did we know that he was a skilled swimmer? Zuko's got some moves in the water.
Skilled swimmer and animal trainer. He got out there and he was like, "Shut up," to the seals, and they were like, it got quiet. Like, it was quiet in there. It was, yeah, Zuko's got some skills. We're finding out. More skills than we knew.
For sure. So the chief reveals to Sokka that he took him off the mission because he wants him to guard Yue, which Sokka is like, "Oh, okay. No problem.
Yeah, I'll do it."
that's easy. Yeah. Like, I was going to do that anyway if I had the chance. Back at the pond, Aang is meditating so that he can cross over to the spirit world and focuses on two koi fish in the pond.
Before we go any further, I know we're not, but listen, the funniest shit in this moment, he's trying to meditate and Katara's doing a play-by-play of what meditation is. When he closes his eyes, he can, like, go to a different place. And, like, the spirit will, "Well, is there something you can do to help him?" He's like, "How about some quiet? Guys, shut the fuck up.
Why don't you shut up? Yeah. I'm trying to concentrate.
Yeah, please.
You know that's already a problem for me."
I mean, I'm trying to do some Avatar shit, finally, for once. Oh, man.
So just as Aang crosses over into the spirit world, Zuko arrives. Katara has stayed behind to plan to protect him. And he and Katara fight. And it is a fight.
Yeah.
Like, Katara lets him know it ain't going to be easy like last time. I got skills.
Yeah, he's even like, "You found a master," because she's wrecking him. Like, yeah, it was good. She did her thing.
She is able to subdue him. And then at daybreak, Zhao attacks, and Zuko is able to attack Katara because he is more powerful because he is draws his power from the sun. So Zuko takes Aang, and just as Zhao's soldiers attack the city, and that's where the episode ends.
Yeah. I was tight, because Katara, if just a little bit more time, she was wrecking him till the sun came up. I was tight. I was like, dang it. It's all right.
Yeah.
So in episode 20 is the second part of the Siege of the North. And Sokka, Yue, Katara, and Appa go in search of Aang while Momo stays in the garden in case someone comes back. You know, in case Aang shows back up to the garden, Momo's going to hold it down. In the spirit world, Aang is hard at work looking for the moon and the ocean spirits. Avatar Roku appears to him and he asks him for help. Roku tells Aang that the ocean and moon spirits are ancient spirits and they crossed over from the spirit world to the mortal world ages ago, almost at the beginning of time. He tells Aang to find a spirit named Ko, who is very old and very dangerous. He's known as the Face Stealer. Scary motherfucker.
Yeah, he's terrifying.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert. This guy is terrifying.
Terrifying. Yes, very much so. Roku tells him that he must not show any emotions at all or that Ko will steal his face. You know, no pressure. Just don't be Aang-like.
Especially for Aang. Like, yeah. Sokka could pull this off easily.
Yeah, no question.
This is a tough one for Aang.
Tough one for Aang. He's super emo. It's all right. We love him for it. In the physical world, Zuko is struggling with Aang's body. He's heavier than he looks. He finds a shelter and begins monologuing, as Zuko is known to do, about how terrible life has been for him, how easy it's been for his sister. He's always had to fight for everything, but he likes it that way because it's made him strong. It's made him tougher.
Blah, 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 blah. I was like, shut up.
Honor, honor, honor. Meanwhile, in the battle, the Water Tribe is getting hammered, and hammered pretty good. Things are looking not so good for the kingdom, and Han shows up, runs in, General Zhao! General, I'm got these weird uniform on. I'm gonna kick your ass. No, I'm not! As Zhao, not Joe, sends him flying off of the deck. This guy is trash as a boyfriend, trash as a soldier. Let's just leave him inside the ocean. It's okay.
This scene was great. It was so good.
Yeah.
There was no conflict at all. He was just dispatched of him and continued talking.
He just made conversation like, as I was saying. I have a plan to remove the moon from the sky. Now, we went from, like, shitty soldier to crazy motherfucker. You're going to do what? Say who? Say how? So, he's telling Iroh that Zhao, that he's going to remove the moon from the equation. Years ago, he discovered the identity of the moon spirit in the mortal form. He went to a library where he read through these books that showed him where he could find them. Iroh cautions him. He says, the spirits are not to be trifled with. And, you know, yeah, I know, Iroh, you're scared of the spirits and all of that. But they made their choice a long time ago when they became mortal, and now they're going to pay for it, Zhao says. So Aang finally arrives and meets with Ko, who has a past with Aang in one of his previous forms as the Avatar. And he tries to antagonize him a little bit. He messes with him about the fact that, you know, he knew him before. And Aang's like, did I know you? And he basically says, you know, it was something about me stealing one of your, you know, the woman you love's face. But, you know, I'm not going to talk about that because you're a different person. You're a different incarnation. This is not the same. You're not the same person in the flesh. So at that point, he lets him know that the koi fish in the pond are the mortal forms of the spirits that he's been seeking, the moon and the ocean. And Heibei, at that point, arrives to guide Aang. Our good friend Heibei in the spirit world shows back up and gets Aang to where he needs to be so he can go back into the mortal world. And at that point, Aang gets back, but he's still in spirit form because his body is missing from the place where he left it. Don't you hate when that happens? You leave your body in one place, come back, it's gone. Terrible. He finds his body in a cave as his spirit shoots like a beam of light into this cave where Zuko took him. He quickly escapes and scoots out of the cave where Zuko catches him. But his friends saw this beam of light and they follow his spirit to where Zuko and Aang are. This time, Katara quickly washes Zuko. Like, quickly washes him. Like, she's like, this is not going to be much of a match. And she's true to her word, wrecks him. And just as they are about to leave, Aang goes back to get Zuko. To which Sokka's like, yeah, this is really smart, right? Like, bring the guy who's trying to kill us. He's very murdery, this guy. I don't know why we're bringing him along.
We can't leave him. He'll die. And Sokka's like, yeah. Yeah, he'll, like, that's okay.
That's the point. That is the point in dying. Fine. Yes, no. But you know, they're too late. Zhao has captured the moon by the time they get back. And the koi fish is now captured by Zhao. And he's the whole entire sky, everything, the world, is turning red. Yue and Aang feel it right away. They can feel like something has changed and shifted. Yue tells them that she owes the moon spirit her life because when she was a weak baby and was not, you know, born without crying out or anything, her family took her to the moon spirit and she was revived, basically put into the water and her hair went from black to white and a piece of the moon spirit brought her to life. Zhao, at that point, is making his big speech, as he's prone to do, about being the moon slayer and the invincible, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, yada, yada, yada.
Yeah, this guy, my legend will be known forever. And Momo attacks him at that point. Good. Momo was waiting for the moment to pounce. I love it. Ah, and then he goes from, I'm going to, get him off me, get him off me. Guy's the worst. So, you know, Team Avatar arrives at that point, and Iroh also shows up saying that the Fire Nation needs the moon as well, and he promises to whoop Zhao's ass like 10 times, tenfold, whatever he does to that moon spirit, he's gonna get it if he does anything to the moon spirit. And Zhao acts like he's gonna relent, but then eventually kills the moon spirit, casting the world into darkness. While Iroh goes into a rage and starts wrecking Fire Nation soldiers, he is a beast. Like, we find out that he is not for those games. And as everyone's losing hope and they're sitting around the pond, Aang enters his avatar state, takes the form of a giant koi fish, and he goes to fight the Fire Nation.
And whoops. Just destroys everything. Like, Aang has some anger issues that I appreciate.
Yeah. So, you know, when he wants to, he really lets you know, I am the Avatar. Don't fuck around, right? So it's wild. I agree. And then Zhao may have escaped from Iroh. He ran out of there because he was getting wrecked. But Zuko is also pretty pissed because now he's lost the Avatar. And he's like, and Zhao was like, this is a bad day, man. You're alive? Like, I thought I killed you, like, already. Like, nope, he's alive. And so they start fighting. And so Iroh suggests, while he's sitting by the pond with Yue, Sokka, and Katara, that Yue has some of the moon spirit in her. And so she could give back some of that spirit and give the moon life. Over Sokka's protest, right? Because he's not wanting to lose Yue. She does this, and she decides that this is the right call, and she dies. So at this moment, as is a kin folklore tradition, we are going to pour one out for Yue.
Our girl Yue. Part crush, part moon spirit.
Part crush, part moon spirit. I like that. It's true. Oh, man. We just met you, but man, we were hoping you would stick around a lot longer. But you know what? You are the moon. So every time we look up, we will remember Yue in this story. So Yue's mortal form disappears in that moment, and she appears to Sokka one last time in spirit form, and the two of them kiss. And she tells him that she will always be with him. The koi fish that Aang had transformed into earlier grabs Zhao during the fight that he's having with Zuko. And you know what? Shrug emoji. Fuck that guy. We're not pouring shit out for him.
We're not pouring any. I'm not wasting one bit of alcohol on him.
No, we're going to drink.
No pours for him. That's it.
We poured it all out. We poured it all out for Yue. Fuck this guy. This guy is dead. He's dead to us. He was dead to us a long time ago. Shrug emoji. We don't give a fuck. After the battle, Paku says that he's going to the Southern Water Tribe. He realizes that there's some benders down there. There's some benders down there that he needs to train. Nah, he just found out where Gran is.
He's about exactly. to go to... He's like, I'm about to roll up in the South.
Yeah, exactly. He was like, I've done my duty. I'm about to go see about Gran. So Katara says, well, wait, what about Aang's training? Somebody needs to train him. To which he says, well, I guess then Aang is going to have to get used to calling you Master Katara, bestowing the honor upon her that she has mastered waterbending. And that's a big thing from where we started in the beginning of this season, which we'll talk about more, to where she is now becoming a master. Wow. The chief tells Sokka that he had a vision when Yue was born, showing a young woman becoming the moon spirit. So through that, he's both proud and sad. He knew that this day was going to come, and he's emotional about what's going on with his daughter. Iroh and Zuko leave on a boat, kind of fashioned out of the wreckage of a Fire Nation ship. It's like really more like a flat, it's like what you saw people floating in the Titanic, It's kind of what it is. And in the final scene, we meet our new villain, somebody who we have not seen before, Zuko's sister, who's being charged by her father, the Fire Lord, to take up the mantle and go after the Avatar, since her brother and her uncle are both too weak to pull it off.
Ooh, what an ending.
Yeah.
Incredible ending of this season. Like, this season was, the buildup was like very methodical, and then they got to this end and it's just like action after action after action. I could barely keep up.
I loved it. I love it.
Yeah, it's really, really good.
Super duper good. I love it. I love it. So we're going to talk about themes. And some of the themes, I want to kick it off with one of the themes that we have here is hope. This whole series, there's a real theme of hope. And throughout the entire first book, hope is one of the major themes. And as we said last week, sometimes the themes are both inward and outward journeys for the characters. Hope is what drives the entire series. It's the motivator for Katara and Sokka, for all the minor characters we meet along the way, and for Aang as well. As the Avatar, Aang represents hope for the people of the Earth Kingdom and the Water Tribes. And they believe that he will help them bring back balance to the world and defeat the Fire Nation, which is a whole thought. As Katara tells us in her intro, she really does believe that Aang will save them all, save the world. And Aang must also have hope that he can accomplish the impossible. All of this is what we see in this season. Sometimes he struggles with this, and Zuko also has hope. He hopes that he'll capture Aang, which will help him restore his honor and allow him to return home. We see that at the end of the season, Zuko doesn't accomplish this. His hopes are dashed in a lot of ways. And now he's considered an enemy of the Fire Nation because he's failed. Where does that leave Zuko on his journey is something that we're going to track very closely as the story progresses.
Another theme is also spirituality and the respect for spirituality. So these four episodes, respecting the spirit world and spirituality, is like a constant theme. It's present in Aang's anger about the degradation of the air temple and the erasure of his people. It's present in the way the water tribe honors the moon and the ocean spirits, understanding that they give them power and balance. As we see with Yue's story, the spirits can give humans power and strength, but they require humans to give as well. The relationship between spirit and human must be reciprocal. Yue is given life by the moon spirit, but she must also give her life in return. As Iroh says to Zhao, we all depend on the balance. Iroh's words have a double meaning. He's speaking at the balance of the moon and the ocean spirits, but he could very easily be speaking about Aang as well, as a connection between the spirit world and the mortal one. Aang's story represents a path to spiritual enlightenment. It is both a coming-of-age story and a spiritual quest.
Man, I really love that part of the story. And I think it really goes hand-in-hand with another one of our themes, which is very present in this last episode of Balance. You know, although many of us are familiar with the imagery, it's worth kind of exploring this thing that happens when Aang goes into the Avatar state to go into the spirit world, of him, you know, seeing the koi fish, and we're exploring this idea of yin and yang in the final two episodes, right? We also know that people of this world are seeking the balance that the Avatar can bring. Believing he will bring harmony, the yin and the yang are symbols with roots in Chinese philosophy and represent duality. The yin and the yang demonstrate that opposite energies are interconnected and they can and complement each other. The yin can represent the moon or the feminine energy, and the yang represents the sun or a more masculine energy. It's no surprise that when Katara, a waterbender who draws her power from the moon, is facing off with Zuko, a firebender who's strengthened by the sun, you know, that this is the symbol that we're seeing, you know, before when he's going into the Avatar state. Koi fish, such as the ones that are in the pond and the spirit oasis, are often paired with the yin and yang symbol to symbolize the dueling sides of all things and the perfect balance and the harmony of them. The circular movement of the fish represent this belief that life is interconnected in an eternal dance. Balance in this show is a power within itself. And as we continue to follow the characters on their journey, it will remain a regular theme that we'll want to keep our eyes on.
Oh, yes. Yes. So many of these themes apply to Zuko and Aang especially. So we want to take some time to talk about some of the other characters and where they are on the journey. So I'll start off with talking about Sokka.
You love Sokka. I like Sokka too.
That's my boy. I love Sokka in part because I think he's the character that we see the most growth from. So mm-hmm. He starts out as this like sexist, closed-minded, only believes in like rational thought, teenage boy. And then at the end of the season, he's a boy who literally falls in love with a spirit.
That's so good. Oh my God.
When we meet Sokka, he's telling Katara how unimportant her womanly duties are. You know, he's the man of the tribe and he's going to take care of everyone. But over the course of the season, we see that Sokka meets a young woman who's a Kyoshi warrior. He's humbled by her, mm-hmm. you know, mostly because he caught those hands. Yeah. And he finds a deeper respect as well for his waterbending sister. And then he falls in love with a woman who is essentially the universal representation for femininity, the moon. That's running through her blood. Mm. So I just find Sokka to be such an interesting character in the way that he evolves in his view of the world, right? Mm-hmm. He has always been the character who likes plans. He's always going to be the character who seeks information. But he also respects the spirit world and has also learned to respect women in a way that I don't think that he originally did.
Yeah, I agree. As even chronicled by that fight that he has in the last episode, I mean, with Yue's betrothed, right? Like, I mean, this guy was really, like, the kind of trash. Not kind of, he was trash in how he was, like, talking about her. And he would not stand for it. He couldn't stand for it one bit. And that's a stark contrast from where he started of demeaning, like, his sister's responsibilities and her place in the tribe to come to that place. So, like, yeah, I really love his growth in this season.
Mm-hmm. Should I speak about Katara as well?
Yeah, go ahead.
So I find Katara to be a pretty consistent character, but a very interesting one. So Katara has, throughout the season, been very connected to her maternal line in honoring her mother's memory and her grandmother's choices. Katara, over the course of the season, really grows in her confidence and in her ability. Mm-hmm. She becomes a better waterbender, and that gives her the confidence. She's one of the most determined people in the show in a lot of ways. Like, she is determined to learn waterbending. We know that from the very first scene, even before Aang is there. And she becomes a master by the end of the season. Let's just think about this. It's been a few months, and she's become a master because she's just so determined, and she's willing to practice and try. Katara draws on the strength of her maternal line to grow and become a stronger young woman, and there's nothing she can't accomplish if she puts her mind to it. Unlike Sokka, Katara tends to be more motivated by love and passion, and sometimes that gives her an advantage, and then sometimes it can lead her down the wrong path. So we should keep an eye on that for the future.
Yeah.
These two siblings are just so... going back to balance, like, they complement each other so well. I don't think that Aang would be nearly as successful as if he just had one of them. Yeah. You know, like, if he was just with Sokka, I don't think that he would have been able to get this far. Or if he was just with Katara, I think between the two of them, they'd get into all kinds of trouble. Yeah. So it's really great to see their, you know, the two siblings, how they work so well together and how they're learning from each other and growing and contributing to this team.
Yeah, I love it. I love that. And, you know, one of my favorite parts in these last couple episodes is when they're going to the air temple, and Katara's like, "Do you think there's really going to be airbenders?" And he says, "You want me to tell you the truth, or you want me to be like you?" So he's basically calling her out for, like, you know, the optimist that she is. And he's, like, more of a realist. And I think, like, you're right. They balance each other out well because of that. So that's really cool. And lastly, we'll talk about Iroh. You know,
General
Iroh, right? You know, the dragon of the West. He is, first of all, that is probably because he spits hot fire in the form of bangers. Like, this guy has bangers. Like, he's put Yaskier to shame. Like, this guy, Yaskier's still out here looking for his follow-up hit to toss a coin to your Witcher. This guy is, you stay tuned. Bangers coming out of this guy. He has a song in his heart. He enjoys a game and will never underestimate the importance of the lotus tile as he goes on a shopping spree. And his wisdom, you know, he is basically wisdom in jovial flesh. Like, this guy is so wise. And he's one of the only adult figures that is consistently in the story throughout, right? And provides wisdom along with a paternal role to Zuko. Losing his own son has made Zuko a person that's super important to him. And he's also, in this, one thing we can find out also about Iroh is he's a fierce protector of the spirit realm and a fierce warrior. When Zhao attempts to kill the moon spirit, Iroh threatens him by saying any harm inflicted on the spirit, he would unleash on Zhao tenfold. And he keeps his promise, like, he wrecks those guys. They're showing again his exceptional fighting skills, and he has been seen, and that we've seen numerous times throughout the season, even when he was captured.
Can I just pause and say that was that action that he took, right? I'm not sure that the Fire Lord would approve of that. So it has consequences, and he did it anyway. It just shows that Iroh will do what's right, even when there are consequences that will negatively impact him.
100%. 100%. So the things that we've seen out of him this season, you know, with that in mind, is you know, when he was captured by the Earthbenders, right? He found a way out of that pickle, and they even said, "You're outnumbered." He says, "Yeah, but you're outmatched." He's like, you know, severely confident in his fighting skills. And also while he was training Zuko, right, and showing how he could learn how to, you know, work with being a firebender as a master himself. And in this confrontation with Zhao over his attempt to throw the world out of balance, he makes sure that he lets him know that he's not for it and puts his foot down in the most crazy way. I love this scene. And it's clear that Iroh lives by a code, like you're speaking about, Andrea. Like, he lives by a code very clearly that is, you know, not always going to line up with what his nation believes. And that code is equal parts yin and yang, which is interesting to see that he is the person who is accompanying Zuko the closest and been whispering in his ear. And I think that that's important, because I almost think about him like I think about I said this to you earlier in the week, like a Jiminy Cricket type of character, a conscience, a person who brings wisdom and shares this wisdom throughout to the character that he's with. So Wookiee, you know, I really enjoy him and love Iroh a lot.
I do. And I think also that he's one of the characters that you could very easily underestimate in the beginning. This guy is not dumb. Like, he's very, very smart. He's a good fighter. I love that about him. And I also just love that this show seems to honor the elders. Gran-Gran, Iroh, Bumi. Like, there's a real, you can learn from elders. Don't dismiss them, even if you don't agree with them. Even though, basically, Zuko dismisses him all the time. But to his own peril.
I'm not playing the Sungihorn, Uncle.
Jesus. This guy. All right, well, that'll do it. And that wraps us for book one. You know, stay tuned. Book two's coming right away. So we'll see you next week. Please listen back to the other episodes. Hope you're enjoying this coverage of Avatar, The Last Airbender. And definitely leave us some reviews. Thank you for all the support of the articles we've been posting on the website. Check out, we'll have some more coming soon. And follow us on Instagram at KinFolklorePod and Twitter, same at handle KinFolklorePod. And we just thank you guys.
Yeah, this has been really great. And I'm excited to go on the rest of this journey. The story is awesome. I love this show.
Me too. One of my favorites.
All right, see you next time.
Later.